Even a relatively short tour of agricultural land in the Rogue Valley will turn up evidence of cannabis growing in places where other crops used to grow. A lot of people took advantage of Oregon legalizing marijuana for personal use. They got into the business of growing cannabis. And the result, by at least one measurement, is enough being grown to supply a couple of pounds of pot for every woman, man, and child in Oregon. That's an oversupply, one which not only has drawn the weary eye of the U.S. Attorney for Oregon, but has drawn a lot less money than people figured they'd make when they got into the business. Let's get an update on cannabis supply and prices. Two guests in the studio with me. Peter Gendron is with Oregon Sun Growers Guild. Hi, Peter. Good to have you back.
Good morning. Thank you.
And Peter Gross joins us as well. He is with Green Valley Wellness and Talent. Hi, Peter.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Peter and Peter, I guess I'll have to say by your last name. So, Peter Gendron, is the Sun Growers Guild limited to people who grow cannabis outdoors?
That is our primary constituency, but beyond that, we also have business members and other partners in the industry that are on the supply side that facilitate the cultivation of cannabis and distribution throughout the state.
So you talk to a fair number of people involved in the process, I gather.
Yes.
And so what are you seeing in terms of A, supply, and B, resulting prices?
Well, we have seen the prices go down. This is something that's been a huge topic of conversation. We see people right now that are unloading at unrealistically low prices, that are not able to support their cost of production, and quite frankly, they're not going to be around next year. This is an area where we've expected the market to shake itself out, and we're going through that period of turbulence right now.
So since it was certainly some expectation that there would be a lot of people getting into a business that wouldn't support them all, I mean, what were the ways in which you might have told people to temper their enthusiasm or hold back on production or do something to be prepared for the shakeout that was likely to come?
Well, recognizing that there are more retail locations now than ever, that's more opportunity to distribute your produce. At the same time, there is a point where we're going to reach the retail threshold as well when the consumer base is adequately supplied. That's going to be the total number of retailers that wind up staying in Oregon. You can only have so many 7-Elevens, so many McDonald's, and so many marijuana stores.
And so what kind of – are stores closing? I mean, are we getting into the point where businesses are closing as a result of this?
Mostly so far it's been medical stores that are closing and or switching over to OLCC locations. But we are starting to see a few retailers fold in areas where they're simply saturated the market beyond what the population can bear.
So, Peter Gross, you came in as a medical dispensary first, is that right, Peter
that's
Gross?
Correct. Yeah, that's correct.
And then, and so how, what's been the progress for you through the changes in law and changes in consumers?
Well, when we had the opportunity to get a recreational license, we got it, but we also kept our medical license because we have we serve a lot of medical patients. We see them. We see a lot of them every day. And so, you know, we needed to serve both. And I don't know if everybody's doing that, but, you know, that was an opportunity and an obligation that we felt we had to do.
How easy or not was the transition from just medical to medical and OLCC?
It was a little challenging, but it wasn't so bad.
Mm-hmm. How long did it take?
Oh, 4 or 5 months, mm-hmm. just in terms of filling out the licensure, putting everything into the cannabis tracking system. That was a bit of a chore. That took a couple of full 8-hour days of me in front of the computer.
Ah.
But, you know, it really wasn't as bad. The regulations and the paperwork really wasn't as bad as a lot of people make it out, and maybe that's just me. I have a flair for that sort of thing. But it wasn't that bad.
So let's talk about the prices then. I mean, what were they when recreational sales began, and what have they become?
When recreational sales began, indoor cannabis sold for, I'd say, an average of $2,400, $2,500 a pound. Now we're seeing indoor cannabis for $700 a pound, $900 a pound.
Wow.
We were seeing really high quality outdoor, which Southern Oregon is renowned for. We were seeing that for $1,800 a pound, and now it's as low as, I mean, I've seen people, as Peter said, trying to dump for $300 to $400 a pound.
Oh, so more than a 50% drop in price.
Yeah.
So what then happens, Peter Gendron, to the people who have produced all this stuff? I mean, it's hard to weed all this out, if you pardon the expression. We always end up with that verb, don't we? But the idea that you've got the other complexity with people trying to do banking, and they won't because of the fact that the federal government still prohibits marijuana, therefore the banks won't deal with this. So where did people get money to get into the business in the first place? And then what do they do with now that they've got their business going well behind what their projections were?
The businesses that are better placed are typically going to be internally capitalized. For people that are taking in loans, yeah, you can't get them through the bank. You can't run through the banking system now. So they're taking private investments, often at rates of interest, which are simply not sustainable. We're talking about a farm-use crop here, and they did not go into their business model looking at farming, and they went into their business model looking at prices which were frankly not sustainable. We always knew that the prices were based on government prohibition, and that as prohibition naturally fell by the wayside, prices would drop to reflect the cost of production, to reflect the quality of living that the people that are producing expect to have in this society. So we're going to see the ones start to drop off initially. The people that are liquidating at unrealistically low prices, they're causing a problem in the market. They're actually creating the issue that they're complaining about with low prices. They're not going to be here next year because they're not well enough capitalized. Once they get done paying back those loans and see that they operated at zero or even a loss for the year, they're going to find something else to do, and that's going to help the prices come back up and stabilize as production drops.
What would you counsel those people to do, though? You say that they're creating the problem that they were trying to avoid, but, I mean, if they're trying to get some money out of their crop, I mean, what else could they do?
That's the problem when you're dealing with a commodity. When a commodity is overproduced, the price will always drop. When a commodity is sparse, the price will always go up. In the long term, they need to be looking at what their own interests are in business. They need to be making sure that they're not taking in investors at unrealistic rates of return. One of the things that we're working on is the Sun Growers Guild. We're also working with a new group that's an organizational-only group, the Western Regional Cannabis Business Alliance. And joining up with the Sun Growers Guild means you're also joining up with the WRCBA. WRCBA has three main issues that we're tackling. One of them is commerce. We have several states that we share borders with, Oregon, California, Washington, Nevada, all share borders and all have cannabis-positive regulations. We should be able to put our alleged surplus into Nevada's stores under the same regulatory system. So that's issue number one. Issue number two is banking, of course, gaining access. We're a legitimate recognized business in all these states. And the third is the removal of the burden of the 280E requirements for these businesses so they can be taxed at the same rate that every other farm is taxed at.
And it's not really an oversupply issue, it's a prohibition issue. That's the problem. We should be able to. Southern Oregon specifically is one of the finest cannabis growing regions on the planet. This is Napa, this is Bordeaux. We do it the best here, and we should be able to export our high quality clean products to other places like Nevada, where the carbon footprint of indoor production is huge, it's enormous. And so Minnesota, North Dakota, places where we shouldn't be, New Mexico, places that are undersupplied, that don't have a proper environment for really growing high quality, because at some point the indoor production is just going to be economically priced out, and outdoor production, it's a farm product. We should be able to grow it under the sun. And so being able to export our products to those other states where they don't have the proper environment for it is going to be a huge boon.
That would seem to be one of the harder nuts to crack, though, for people in the cannabis business, though, is the idea that this stuff should move across state lines, because that's part of the issue right now.
Absolutely. It's the prohibition issue.
Certainly. And the complaint of diversion or distribution outside of Oregon, that, again, it's a prohibition issue. Peter is correct there. And he's also correct in using terms like Napa and Bordeaux. This is something that our producers that are able to get through this first downturn and ride out this particular wave into the next segment of the evolution of this industry, Southern Oregon, in fact, all of Oregon, is going to be branded in terms that are going to make their product more valuable than product that is produced in other areas. We're working at the legislature as the guild to establish terroirs for cannabis cultivation statewide. Those will be recognized and branded in a premium value compared to products produced other places as cannabis is normalized and as more states develop cannabis-positive regulation.
We are talking about cannabis prices and cannabis supply in Southern Oregon. Peter Gendron is with the Oregon Sun Growers Guild. Peter Gross runs Green Valley Wellness and Talent. Your questions, your comments, your curiosity about cannabis and the business that it has become in Oregon, welcome here on The Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So, Peter Gendron, were you counseling people at the outset of planting under legalization for personal use in Oregon to think in terms of the prices ending up very low, to expect that to happen?
Absolutely. And one of the dichotomies in the industry really is that I work in private businesses, Omnibudsman Enterprises. I do development and compliance work, and I work with two types of people. Type one is really good at business. Type two is really good at cultivating cannabis. There generally isn't an in-between, but type two is going to get better at type one and vice versa as we go through this market fluctuation.
That's me.
In what sense?
Oh, just that having both skills and being able to marry both skills in terms of we also have a farm called Epic Family Farms, and having to gain, and I came in with that business education, and I came in with a little bit of cannabis cultivation knowledge, and really learning how to blend those two to navigate the marketplace has been challenging, enlightening, a lot of fun, and a lot of work.
Well, I wonder about that particular part of it. It's not like you can go to the Extension Service at Oregon State University because they want to get involved because they had all the federal grants. It's just not like you can rely upon people who have an extensive experience on large grows of cannabis.
No, scaling was a major issue.
All right. We have a question here from Jake in Klamath Falls. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Peter Gross and Peter Gendron. We're talking about cannabis prices.
Hi. How you guys doing today?
Doing okay. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. My curiosity was around cannabis liability insurance, the same way that you have liquor liability insurance. Have you gentlemen seen any movement at the legislative level regarding that, you know, that push? Or are you, are a majority of the operators in the industry right now getting surplus lines insurance that you're aware of for general liability and things of that nature?
The majority are not. That's a very good question. There are people that have that insurance. There are companies specifically now that cater to the cannabis community. You're going to see two different things happening in the insurance industry. Number one is you may get a letter from your insurer that says they're not going to insure cannabis-related activities. And another one is you'll get a letter from a company that says they only insure cannabis-related activities.
We've been able to get general liability, but in terms of the cannabis products themselves, companies have been hesitant to put some insurance on that, although I have seen there is some crop insurance now available, but it's not cheap.
Okay. So there is just specific to cannabis, or
yeah,
just crop insurance that,
yeah,
they know you're in cannabis business. When we were talking about the difficulty that you see in export, that you should be able, you're saying, to carry your material across state lines, with the U.S. attorney, when he speaks about this, and of course the Attorney General of the United States, Jeff Sessions, essentially delegated authority in the marijuana-producing states to the state's attorneys. The state attorney in Oregon is saying he does see a major oversupply issue here and does see the potential, at least, for some exporting going on. So what goes on within the business about trying to talk people out of doing voluntary exports in a business that's trying to be legal?
Well, I think a majority of people that are doing it legally in the OLCC system are doing it legally. And what you see with that, people that are shipping it out of state are people that set their grows up illegally. They are shipping them out of state for that purpose. And so I don't know if you actually see a ton of diversion, you know, from the OLCC system out of state. I think the U.S. attorney in general is grandstanding. He's obviously the only one in the legal states that's really trying to get his name in the paper a whole bunch. He's not wrong about some of the things that he says, but in terms of taking a product out of the regulated system and shipping it over state lines, I think that that issue is a bit overstated.
So you're saying the regulated system is keeping with the regulations?
Yeah.
And all right, so there are essentially two different economies then still in cannabis in Oregon.
Because of the prohibition issue.
Because of prohibition, exactly. And it is not the position of our federal attorney to make policy or to advocate for policy. It is his position to enforce policy. It's our job as industry participants to influence and to make policy, and we do that through organizations like the Sun Growers Guild and the Retailers of Cannabis Association.
Let us take another call. Jeff in Medford, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Peter Gendron and Peter Gross.
Yeah, this is for Jeff?
Yes.
I just wanted to comment that this drop in the prices in marijuana is going to affect a large portion of the economy in this area, because there's people that supply not just the growers and the distributors, it's people that supply like cedar fencing. That was cedar, you couldn't buy cedar fencing for a while because it was going up around these grow sites, and the people who sell soil and the fertilizer and the people that build these big giant indoor grow, you know, whatever you want to call them, hoop houses and things, all that is going to be on the decline with declining prices. And that's, there's a lot of people that made a lot of money off of that stuff.
All right, and Peter,
they won't be making it anymore.
All right, Peter Gross is nodding yes. So a lot of other people, other than just people directly in the cannabis business, affected here.
Absolutely, the 2017 Whitney report basically calculated over $1.2 billion in economic activity associated with the cannabis industry alone,
in just Oregon,
mm-hmm. And you know, that includes cannabis touching and ancillary businesses like this gentleman's talking about. Mm-hmm. And absolutely, those things are going to be affected. And those are, I mean, when you put up a fence, that's a one-time deal anyway.
Right.
So you get that initial burst of the grow out of, you know, of building these products. And so that die-off was destined in the first place. But contractors, maintenance, soil, you know, the wages associated, all of those things, as these farms begin to slough off because the economy just can't support it, you know, we're going to see a downturn in that economic activity and tax revenue as well.
All right. We just have less than a minute left, and I want to address something you guys were talking about when you came in, which is concern for people who do use marijuana for medical purposes still, and concerns about supply there. What's the issue?
I think a substantial portion of our what is called a surplus really ought to be dedicated by the state to the medical patients that we have. Over half of the program are means-tested, low-income. That means they're the poorest Oregonians, and the state recognizes it, but the current rules are preventing them from getting access to the medication they truly need.
So so the state would actually give them the surplus or buy it for a really low price from the growers?
We're working on it. It has to be handled by a private business, but the state can facilitate that.
Interesting. Okay. Well, if that comes to pass, perhaps we'll have you back here very soon. Peter Gendron was with the Oregon Sun Growers Guild. Peter Gross is with Green Valley Wellness and Talent. They've been telling us that the old prices for cannabis, outdoor $1,800, indoors $2,500. Now it's as low as $300 and $700 per pound. Thank you both for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.